The following is probably one of the most interesting, strange, and even dangerous stories we have shared in a very, very long time. It is definitely a story you should hear. Remember that cults and sects are not fiction, and in most cases, they are much closer to you than you think. Most likely, you know someone who belongs to one of these groups, maybe someone you pass by every day, maybe even someone near you in this very second. Let's get to today's story. We appreciate the author's trust to share it with us in the community. For obvious reasons, their identity will remain anonymous. Mine, you already know. My name is Uriel Reyes, and you are entering Tales of the Night. Life is strange. We tend not to value the mundane until something disturbs it. We complain about our jobs until we lose them. We hate the flaws in our car until it gets stolen. The list goes on. Some time ago, I complained about how boring my life was, that nothing was happening to me. But now I long for those times when I would go out on the street without fear that someone was following me. When I did not distrust those around me, when I was not afraid to turn off the lights before going to sleep. You might feel like I'm exaggerating, but wait until you hear my story. It begins at one of the most vulnerable moments of my life. I was going through a terrible depression. I had just lost my job. My aunt was extremely ill. On her last months, everything was so bleak. But the straw that broke the camel's back was going to a party, which I should not have gone to. My girlfriend insisted that it would do me good to go out and distract myself, especially since I hadn't seen my best friend, who was hosting the party, in a while. I told her no. In fact, I told her no many times, that I preferred to stay home and rest. But the truth is that when I stayed in, I couldn't sleep. I suffered from insomnia and horrible anxiety. So I went to the party, and when I arrived, I found my girlfriend kissing my friend. They were both drunk, but that was no excuse. They apologized. They cried. We cried. I told them I forgave them, but that night I ended my relationship with both of them. The following day, my friend called me. In addition to apologizing again, he asked me if I was going to tell his girlfriend. Until that moment, I hadn't even remembered she existed. She was a very important girlfriend, not only for him, but also for his family, due to the political matters they were involved in. I told him no, that it wasn't my place to tell her, and that it really wasn't my problem.
"Thanks, brother," he said. "I know you don't care about anything I've got to say, but I owe you one. I'll always be there for you when you need it."
He was right. I didn't care. The best favor he could do me was to never contact me again. The following months were terrible. I've always found it hard to make friends and trust people, and this event only made me completely isolate myself from the world, from everyone. There were sad days when I would wake up at 1 in the afternoon. I barely ate anything. I locked myself in my room, telling my mom I was looking for a job and sending resumes when I was really playing video games. I lost so much weight that I didn't look like the same person. One afternoon, I received a Facebook friend request. I recognized the name and girl in the photo because I had gone on a date with her years ago. I hadn't even noticed that she had unfriended me. It was strange. We hadn't had any chemistry when we went out, but she greeted me warmly online. When I accepted her request, we chatted for a while. She told me she had been thinking of me a lot recently and invited me to a get-together in Colonia del Valle. It was an excuse to finally get out of my house. I needed one. I needed to distract myself. To stop thinking, stop feeling sad for a moment. So I went. There were just a few people there. A guy a couple years older than me, whom I'll call Orlando. came over to greet my friend, and then we started chatting. He was as passionate about movies as me, and we had lots in common. It was as if he was destined to be my new best friend. I suddenly realized it was already 5 in the morning, and Orlando, the host, my friend and I were the only ones left. I had never had a friendship at first sight like that. Maybe we had connected a lot, or maybe, at that moment, what I needed most was a friend, not a romantic relationship. From then on, I started going to more parties. A few weeks later, I started a relationship with the girl from Facebook. However, it ended just as quickly as it came. I was glad to get Orlando's call when he found out. He asked me how I was doing and if I wanted to go out to distract myself. I finally had a real friend. Orlando's an actor, so we went to a staging of his new play that was preparing to premiere. It was for friends and family only, and quite an amateur production in a small old theater. When the play ended, he approached me, and I congratulated him. Honestly, I thought he was really talented. That's when Orlando told me something odd.
"Look, everyone is going to go to an actor's party now. But I don't want to go. I have to do something much more important, and I would like you to come with me."
He looked for paper and pen in his bag to write down an address for me. He never shared anything by phone.
"If you want to, and I hope you do, go to this address at 11 o'clock. Ask for me at the door, and please get there at 11 sharp. No later, and especially no earlier."
It was a tad strange, but I didn't want to go back home, where my depression was waiting for me. So I told him I'd be there. We said goodbye for the moment, and I went for a walk around the city to kill time. I had no idea what he had invited me to, but it seemed to be very important to him. What happened next, what I felt as I walked, is difficult for me to explain. At that moment, I did not understand it. And perhaps after everything I discovered, after everything I experienced, I have only managed to interpret it. But I can't say for sure. I wandered the Zona Rosa district. It was as awake and lively as every other night. But I couldn't stop feeling like I was being watched. Like someone was following behind me. But not as if I was about to be mugged. It was different. I would pass a place and feel that the people at the door were watching me. When I turned the street corner, a figure appeared at the end of it, eyes on me. I continued to walk, but with each place I passed, I felt like someone inside was staring at me. But at the time, I brushed it off as anxiety. Nothing more. I told myself it was nerves because I tend to be very antisocial, and I had no idea what I was about to walk into. I arrived at 11 like I was told. I figured it would be a bar or something public, but the address was a house that looked uninhabited from the outside. The facade was beautiful, and the 2 floors of Porphyrian architecture were almost entirely covered by ivy. It seemed familiar to me. Maybe I had even seen it before, one of those houses I photographed in high school when I took a photography class. Because although I didn't entirely remember it, something told me I had already been there. I knocked on the door, and a smiling man opened it. When I mentioned Orlando's name, he told me to come in, that they had been expecting me. He took me by the shoulder and led me inside. Upon entering, I not only breathed a sigh of relief, but also felt extremely excited. This was nothing more than a gathering of men, almost all my age, except for 2 gentlemen over 50. Drinking whiskey, cognac, playing cards, talking about life, politics, movies, soccer. A gentleman's club or something? I didn't know how those fraternities worked, but for a person like me who only had one best friend in his life with such poor results, the idea of belonging to something like this seemed incredible. I chatted with many of the men and realized half of them were also there for the first time. The next morning, I woke up in a good mood. I had a message from Orlando saying that his group liked me a lot. He asked if I wanted to go back next week, and I replied, of course.
Just one thing, he told me. This is very exclusive. Please don't talk about it with anyone. Don't even mention it. It's not for everyone.
No problem, I replied. The following week, only 3 of the 10 guys who went the first time returned. And it was exciting, you know? Thinking that only a few of us had received an invitation. I got to know some of the other members better. There were many artists, which made the whole thing feel very bohemian. I returned every week along with the 2 other young men. But after a few meetings, I noticed something strange about the time they would ask us to arrive. I don't know how long those meetings lasted, but it was clear that we, the newcomers, were only arriving at the very end. Every time I walked into that house, it felt like something important had just happened, but that we have just missed it. I didn't want to despair and ask questions. I had already made ties with several of the members, and I thought that at some point, I would have access to the entire meeting. That day was about to come. In a call, as always, because we never talked about the group via messages. Orlando asked me to arrive 1.5 hours earlier for the next session. That would be enough. I was inquisitive and thought I would finally learn more about what this club was really about. I had no further contact with him until the day came, and with it, that night. Again, I felt very nervous, just like the first time. I left my parents' house early and took advantage of the fact that I was already in the area to walk along Reforma. It was drizzling. In the distance, it looked like a storm was brewing, but it was still a pleasant walk. An alarm on my phone warned me that there were 25 minutes left before the gathering, so I started walking towards the house. I had calculated to arrive a few minutes early and knock right on time. As I walked along Reforma, I noticed a figure under an umbrella. I got the impression that he was walking behind me, in the distance, but following me. When I took some smaller streets, it became more noticeable that he was following me. I kept walking, pretty distracted, constantly turning to see if he was still behind me, whether he had come closer or disappeared. I remember it well, because I arrived at the house almost without realizing how I got there. My attention snapped back when I arrived at that huge wooden door. I went to knock, but before I could do so, the door opened. That strange bald man from the first night opened the door again, inviting me in with a soft voice, like the one ladies use in church. It was clear that the atmosphere was completely different that time.
This way, please. Welcome. Keep completely silent.
Once again, he took me by the shoulder and led me to the studio where the meetings were held. This time, the room was completely empty. He asked for my cell phone as usual, but now he also asked me for something new.
Write down the code to unlock it, he said.
It wasn't a question. He didn't wait to ask my opinion, and I didn't have time to even try to remember if I had anything worth hiding on it, or anything that might embarrass me if they saw it. At that moment, I didn't think about all my banking and personal information stored on my phone. I just wrote it down, and that kind, bald man disappeared through a door. He returned after a few minutes with a wooden box. He asked me to undress completely and place my clothes in it, and well, I agreed because I was sure I was being initiated into the club, that they were about to haze me. I had already experienced hazing when I played sports in high school, so I could take it. When I did, he told me to stand up and blindfolded me. Then he covered me entirely with a black cloth, all over my body. It wasn't a robe or a hood or anything like that. Simply a cloth without holes that covered me completely. Imagine as if I were a ghost, all in black. I only know what happened next because he made a mistake. He didn't tighten my blindfold all the way, and when he put it over my eyes, it moved slightly, leaving one eye free for me to see through the fabric. It wasn't much, but it was enough to tell you the following. This man had walked me by the shoulder, from the front door to the studio many times. And just like before, I trusted him to lead me again. We walked down a long hallway. Every now and then, I managed to see some dim lights, like candles or lamps. Before reaching another door, he told me very slowly that he was going to check if I could go in yet, and that I would enter the last part of the ritual. He told me not to say anything, not even the slightest sound. He opened a heavy wooden door, peeked in, and then led me inside. I entered a chapel. I know I wasn't meant to see that, but the lighting was bright enough for me to see through the blindfold. The place had pews, and they were all filled with hooded figures in black, sitting silent and still, as if all the members were in some kind of trance. Then, I felt something. The air pressure in the room shifted. My ears instantly popped, and I started to feel very hot. They sat me down in the last row with my head tilted, so I couldn't see what was on the altar, and told me not to get up. The light was so dim that I could barely see anything. But with a small head movement, which I hoped had remained imperceptible in case someone was watching me, I turned to my right. I saw two other silhouettes in my pew. I could see that the person closest to me was shaking. My ears were too clogged to make it out perfectly, but I thought I heard the person crying under their cloak. Someone on the altar, whom I couldn't see but I could feel, said a few words in a language totally unknown to me. Then, he disappeared through a door, which I heard close behind him. And one by one, the black silhouettes rose and left the room. The room went completely dark. Even with my free eye, I could no longer see anything. But someone came down from the altar, and that made the heat in the room unbearable. Something came close to us. I could feel it. And then it moved away, as if it had gone back out the way it came. The heavy door opened again, and the man came back in for us. He took us one by one to a small room where he left us the box with our clothes. They didn't give us our phones back until we left the house. I was the second to leave the dark room. In the end, only the shaking figure remained. I got dressed quickly and walked out into the parlor. The members I knew were all smiling and welcoming me as if I had just passed a test. I didn't see the other guy who would have come out before me. But honestly, I didn't care. I felt euphoric. Orlando hugged me very happily and told me he hoped to be able to tell me everything soon. And I felt fulfilled. I was finally going to be part of something. At some point, just before leaving, I went to the bathroom. The one I normally used was occupied, but next to it, there were some stairs, and I was sure there was another bathroom upstairs. I went up, feeling confident because I was part of this club. I peeked into an open door, hoping to find the bathroom, but I had found a bedroom instead. I immediately stepped back, embarrassed to be invading someone's personal space. I didn't know the place also functioned as a residence. I had only ever been in the lounge. The bed was perfectly made with white sheets, and behind it there seemed to be an armchair with someone sitting in it. I don't know whether it was a dummy, a mannequin, or a person with a mask, but its face, its head, wasn't human. It was the head of an owl. Don't miss the next episode. the second part to this story. This has been Tales of the Night.